Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We enjoy your time, that's for sure. Hey, folks, we're very interested in your ideas, your suggestions, your critiques of this program. We want to make sure that we're doing the things you want us to do and not doing the things you don't want us to do. So if you have anything that you want to say to us, send it to requests at theunionedge.com. That's requests at theunionedge.com. Guarantee you we'll read it. We may or may not get back to you. And if you really just want to tell me I'm no good, that's fine. Just tell me how I can do a better job. You know, I got broad shoulders and thick skin. I can take it. All right. So, the attorneys are in and they're off the clock. So we're gonna talk about this. We've got Healy and Hornack in here, Mike and Jay. Guys, welcome back.
Good to be back, Charles.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. We appreciate you being with us today. Number of things going on out there. Let's talk a little bit about the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that's the Frieder's case. Yeah?
Ah.
Okay. Yep. I want to ask you about that. Now, I come out of the Fed, so I'm used to working in a quote-unquote what's called an open shop, that everybody gets the benefits.
Right.
But if you really positively just don't want to pay dues, okay. Yeah, we got it. The other side of that is with the Fed, we'll represent you. Union reps will represent you right up until there's a cost. There's an expense to the union. So if you want to go to arbitration, that's fine. I'm going to tell you, sign a check for $7,500. Usually people want to join about that point in time. If I join, is it any cheaper? Yeah. But my question is, you know, as we're moving forward with this and everything I keep hearing is the Frieder's case is probably not going to be where we want it. We're going to have to go back and reexamine that at a later date, even though this has been rolled over a couple of times by the Supreme Court already. In a situation like that, Jay, Mike, you guys are both attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
You belong to the Bar Association.
Yep.
That's not exactly...
I have to pay my bar fee.
You got to pay your bar fee.
Or I can't be a lawyer.
I got to pay my bar tab. You got to pay your bar fee. That's
right.
What, yeah, okay.
Right.
If I am a member of the Chamber of Commerce, I have to pay my bar fee.
Or you're not a member of the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
And you can't get the benefits.
Right. Now, my question to you is, if I am an organization, an advocacy organization, I'm still a private organization.
Yep.
How can you compel me to spend my resources in any way I don't want to?
Okay. Well, let me back up a little bit, and I absolutely agree with you. The rationale...
But I'm missing something.
No, the rationale of the Right to Work Committee... And
Mr. Mix.
Those folks, and the conservative... probably five-person majority in the Supreme Court, is that since you're a public employee, if you're forced to either pay union dues or what we call fair share fees or agency fees.
Right.
So as a public employee, you don't have to pay full dues. You can pay agency fees, and Pennsylvania's fair share fees. They're saying if you're compelled to do that, we're abridging this worker's free speech rights.
Now, wait a second. if I'm making you pay... Mm. For the service I'm providing you, what if I'm a tow truck driver? If I'm a tow truck driver and you want your car towed and you say, oh, I don't want to pay for the AAA membership because that's an abridgment of my free speech.
Right.
Because the AAA does advocate for travelers.
Right. Right.
And they lobby Congress.
Right. And the other thing the cases have missed in the public dialogue has missed is that the argument was, well, the union takes positions on things I don't agree with, so if I have to pay dues to that, it's abridging my free speech rights. But they made it seem like it was election activity. But in the union context, if there's going to be support of candidates, and that political activity is funded by entirely voluntary donations to political action committees. And what they missed in the Supreme Court argument, and unfortunately all the lawyers kind of missed it, the analogy you just raised in terms of, you know, lawyers have to pay to be members of the bar. Doctors have to be paid to be members of medical associations. No one's saying their free speech rights are being abridged. Bar associations, medical associations take positions on different issues. And we would hope at some point in the future, the Supreme Court would, they're expanding the free speech rights of certain political tendencies and corporations under Citizens United, perhaps they would expand the free speech rights of labor members in secondary boycott contexts and things like that. But I will say this. Locally, the County of Allegheny and the City of Pittsburgh did sign an amicus brief on the Friedrichs case saying it's important unions have these rights. It's important for stable collective bargaining mm-hmm. relationships between municipalities and unions. And this is what we get out of those relationships. And right. it was a powerful amicus brief.
And it is my greatest hope that these situations will... as more and more public becomes aware of what's going on. Okay. We have somebody who has said my free speech is impinged because, and you know, the National Right to Work folks and others picked it up and ran with that case, or they encouraged that person to say this or whatever, however that happened. That's
fine.
They
encouraged three people in a bargaining unit of thousands of people to say that.
Now, my thing is we are a nation that values the majority, but also protects the minority. And I have to tell you, it's been my experience with labor that if somebody says, hey, you know what? I don't want to pay dues for X, Y, or Z. Okay. Yeah. You know, that's fine.
Just pay the fair share fees for the cost of representing.
Or, you know, I've even had cases where it's like, hey, you know what? If you don't even want to do that, send your dues to the church or send your dues to, you know, something else. We can come up with a list of things and, you know, that we can agree on or are appropriate.
And under current law, you can do things like that. If someone's a genuine religious objector, they dues can be sent to the church. Where the Supreme Court's going with this basically is, you know, all the unions have an obligation to represent people, whether they pay dues or not, whether they pay fair share fees or not. But the little opening, and unions are talking about it, well, if you're not paying dues or fair share fees, we think there is a legal way. If you come to us for service, I just got fired, I want you to take this to arbitration, there's a legal way for us to bill that person for the cost of those services. We think that can be done.
There you go. And thereby, if there's a means, ways, and method of recovering for services provided, then we've got something we can talk about.
I think but that's right.
Because it's been my experience with the federal government when somebody comes to you and says, you know, I'm not a dues-paying member of the union. I'm part of the bargaining unit. I got myself into this, that, and the other thing. I want you to represent me. And I say, okay, fine. We'll represent you. What do you want us to do? I want you to take this to arbitration. Okay, well, give me a check for $7,500 to pay for the arbitration. Oh, well, you can't make me do that. Well, we got to pay for it somehow.
Right. Right.
You know, so if there's a way to come back and recover, you know, there are some very interesting things that go on out there, like legal representation funds.
Yeah, and we think there's two ways to deal with this issue, and that what Friedrichs, the decision we anticipate is not going to be a good decision. We think we can deal with it by things like charge for services rendered, and also sort of reorganizing in the bargaining unit, more direct contact with members. And for mm-hmm. some unions, they may do fine. Now, some weaker unions, the smaller units, may have more trouble. But we think many unions are already making plans to reorganize and to address these issues.
Organize.
Yeah, although one union I represent still anticipates losing a couple hundred thousand dues-paying members.
Nationally.
Nationally, yes.
I can think about things like that. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. We're going to get back. We're going to get Jay to talk next.
Okay.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Do you know how important American consumers are? Americans consume 25% of everything made on Earth. Without the support of American consumers, every major corporation on the planet would be in trouble. How do we use that buying power to protect our family, our jobs, and our communities? Well, let's start looking at country of origin labeling on food. Right now, Nabisco is planning to send Oreo, Chips Ahoy, Honey Graham, and Ritz Cracker production to Mexico, exporting 600 good-paying American jobs from Chicago. Nabisco's Made in Mexico products are bad for American jobs in our communities. As a consumer, I want American-made Oreos, Chips Ahoy, Honey Grahams, and Ritz Crackers because American jobs depend on it, and so do we. You can learn more at fightforamericanjobs.org. That's fightforamericanjobs.org.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
You must have thrown 1,000 pitches teaching him to hit a home run. Spent countless Saturdays running routes so he could learn to hit an open receiver. Endless afternoons teaching him how to hit the three-pointer. But how much time have you spent teaching him what not to hit? Teaching boys that all violence against women is wrong is one of the most important things a man can do. Learn how to start the conversation at teachearly.org. Brought to you by Futures Without Violence and the Ad Council.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We've got, the lawyers are in and off the clock. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, or comments, send them to requests@theunionedge.com, requests@theunionedge.com. I'll keep an eye on it. And if you send something a little bit later, that's fine too, because we'll get it to Healy and Hornack, Mike and Jake. Guys, welcome back.
Hey, hello. Nice to be here.
We're talking about the Friedrich case and whether or not unions will be required to represent individuals at the union expense without being able to gain reimbursement and other things. That's I didn't know that was being worked on.
Yeah, several unions that we represent are working on it. And you know, right now, if someone's not up paying dues or not paying fair share fees, you basically, under duty of fair representation, dictates, you have to still represent the person, and mm-hmm. we'll still continue to represent the person. But we think legally in these situations that there can be some fees charged for services rendered.
And now there's another caveat out there, legal representation funds. AFGE has a lot of councils with legal representation funds. Put a little money in there, you hire an attorney, the attorney represents, then bills the government for work services done on behalf of the union. That funds go back into the fund. Is that going to also be possible going down the road with a state, county, municipal?
Yeah, that's one of the things being looked at. A number of unions have sort of legal defense funds or legal funds, and there's deductions off paychecks, much like dues. They go into a fund. The deductions are very minimal. Typically in these funds is to provide services for traditional legal cases outside the union context. But there's no reason it couldn't be applied to a context where there's a union present.
Very interesting. Now, Mike, you're just saying that some of the unions still expect to lose several hundred thousand people.
Yes.
Obviously, for me, that's troubling.
Worst case scenario. Yeah.
Obviously, that's troubling for me because I don't want to see anybody without representation. But what we need to remind people is this is people who want to drop from the rolls.
Yes.
Okay. So, and at that point in time, the union would still have a fiduciary responsibility to represent under duty of fair representation.
Yes.
And then it becomes a matter of how do we go back and collect for representation.
Yeah, it's a matter of two things. How do we collect at least some of the costs of that representation? Because some arbitrations can get expensive.
Right.
And secondly, how do we help those members to understand that it's in their interest to be paying dues? And these are the things the union has done for you and will continue to do for you in the future.
Right. One other thing, you know, it's kind of amazing to me. I think about some of the units I've worked with, some of the units that I know, and you know, quite frankly, union participation, membership participation is all over the chart.
Yes.
You know, in some places it's 10-15%, some places it's 99+. So that is, you know, for me, that's an old dog organizer. That's organizing.
Yes.
Go out and organize it. Now, my question is you know, so it's doable, you know, and it can be done. Jay, why can't we all unions turn ourselves into fraternal organizations and represent that way? Like the FOP. The FOP is a fraternal organization.
Right.
I'm not even sure that they're a 501c4.
Well, we were talking before the break about FOPs, right?
Right.
And just some
most unions, I think, are C5s.
C5s.
The FOP structure, I mean, I think unions could do that. I don't know if it's in their interest. I don't think in terms of the Fredericks case and the obligation to pay dues and the alleged First Amendment rights to not pay dues, I don't think changing the structure would necessarily affect that legally. And secondly, I don't think it would diminish the political attacks because, I mean, for whatever you say in the case about this is about First Amendment rights and people's individual rights, it's an effort to undermine the power of unions, the political influence of unions, the ability of unions to negotiate decent wages, hours, and working conditions, and then ultimately by reducing membership to reduce the union's influence in the political sphere and unions being the major force against the corporate influence and
right.
the political process these days.
The last line of defense, protecting the community.
Yes.
Right. Well, you know, I think we all acknowledge that. Can we get Mr. Mix from the National Right to Work Foundation to admit that?
I'll tell you what, I can put out a standing offer to debate him anytime, any place, on any topic.
You know,
he will never agree to it.
Yeah, no. And I think my 16-year-old son could probably have a more meaningful labor conversation than he. you know, I was watching him. I was stunned. I was watching him on C-SPAN sit there and say, people in right-to-work states have more disposable income for buying things in their community. And I was like,
it's worse than a lie.
Yeah, no, I mean, what does the anti-union fairy come by and give them things?
Yeah, if you look at the right to work states, most which are mostly red states, the income levels are lower, disposable income is lower, income inequality is greater, and people
right.
people have to rely on more, ironically, on more government benefits
right.
to get by: food stamps, welfare, housing vouchers,
right. Exactly. And it is amazing to me that people in those states go and vote against their own family's best interests over whatever their thought process is.
Yeah, it's amazing and disappointing.
Yeah, it is. So the education process continues. The education process continues. Jay, we have cut you out. I'm sorry, man.
That's all right. Mike's the expert on these topics. I defer to him.
There we go.
He's never said that before.
There we go. But I mean, again, guys, it's always great to have you in here. It's always a dynamic conversation. I got to ask you, what kinds of things do you think we're going to be seeing coming up over the next couple of weeks?
I think, there's going to be a lot of issues within the labor movement over the elections, a lot of the Senate races and House races across the country, mm-hmm. the presidential races. The Supreme Court case will come down with the Friedrichs decision. There are other cases popping around out there. But the one thing I'd like to say to listeners, if there's a particular topic or questions they want us to answer, shoot them into the station.
Absolutely.
We're happy to address it.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, folks, if you want to get something through the attorneys on the air with us, send it to requests@theunionedge.com, requests@theunionedge.com. And, of course, there are probably people out there right now that have serious individual questions. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, the website is www.healyhornack.net. We can both be reached via email through that site. And then there's phone numbers as well, mm-hmm. the old-fashioned way of getting in touch with us. Talk to us in person. 888-391-6944 is the toll-free number if you're calling from out of the Pittsburgh area. One of the things that we have on our website is a variety of resources that are available on a number of topics related to labor, employment law, civil rights, civil liberties. When I was here last month, we talked a little bit about workers' compensation, for
right.
example, people who get injured or ill while working. And you had asked what resources we had available or could point people to. And there's a couple of things that I wanted to tell people about today, which is on the issue of workers' compensation, basic information for injured, ill workers and resources. There's two really excellent resources, the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative, NESRI is one, and the other is National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, the National COSH organization. Those are two groups, pro-worker organizations that provide great assistance on this topic.
Exactly. And, from the discussion that we had last week, I knew that in most states, Pennsylvania included, that the field's tilted towards the employer.
Yes.
I did not realize until you and I sat down and talked just how tilted it is towards the employer and the taxpayer afterwards. Because when it's all said and done, you get dumped off onto Social Security.
Oh, right.
And the taxpayer is footing the bill for the error, omission, or, knowingly, willingly, and affirmatively actions taken by the agency or the organization. Wow. The taxpayers are taking that one and the individual's taking that one.
That's right.
Hard.
Yep. Federal government, specifically Medicare, is trying to crack down on efforts by corporations to shift the burden from the companies and their insurance carriers who are supposed to be paying for injured workers onto the government. They are doing a little better of a job, but there are still ways that companies can get around that these days.
And we got to stay on top of it. Guys, we got about a minute left. Any final words for us today?
No, just happy to be here. And if you've got questions, topics people want us to talk about, we're happy to address them, whether it's sort of small topics or big political topics.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jay, the website, one more time, please.
Sure. www.healyhornack, that's healyhornack.net.
Fantastic. We appreciate that. In the meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio.